Hello, Jenny Roper, editor of Work magazine here. Popping up very quickly before this episode of What If, just to let you know that if you're enjoying this podcast, chances are you'll love Sister Title Management Today's podcast too. The Leadership Lessons podcast delves into the world of leadership and management, bringing insights, trends and advice to the ears of busy senior leaders every week. Previous interviewees include FTSE 100 CEO André Lacroix, Harvard Business Review author Amy Gallo, and Kidnap negotiator Scott Walker. Get it wherever you usually get your podcasts. Have you ever allowed your imagination to run wild about the world of work, to wonder what would happen if we tore up all the rules and started again? Welcome to What If, a podcast from the CIPD's Work magazine that dares to ask the previously unthinkable. How would you feel about noting down on a Google Forms questionnaire in detail who you were friends with at work? Whose name would you write down? How would you define the nature of each relationship? It sounds like an impossible, even absurd exercise. Yet this is exactly what staff working for ITV were asked to do in October last year. The UK broadcaster's strict new personal relationships at work policy goes far beyond just romantic relationships. It requires workers to declare, in ITV's words, a sexual, romantic or close relationship or friendship, whether short or longer term. Those who fail to do so could risk disciplinary action or even losing their jobs. And the rules apply to anyone involved with the organisation, including contractors, consultants, agency staff, volunteers, apprentices and even those on work experience. The new dictate was the HR fallout, of course, of this morning presenter Philip Schofield's resignation earlier in the year over a workplace affair with a younger colleague. But was it the right response? Is ITV in effect banning relationships, even friendships with colleagues, by issuing such stringent rules? And what impact could that have on camaraderie and friendly working relations? Is this kind of ban ever a good idea? Certainly, relationships at work are a thorny issue employers and HR practitioners have long grappled with. Spending so much time together, probably with like-minded individuals, it's arguably inevitable that colleagues will form close relationships, platonic but also, on occasion, romantic. This perhaps felt fairly unproblematic in decades gone by. But the spotlight shone on harassment and abuse by the Me Too movement highlighted just how exploitative workplace relationships can be, particularly where there's an imbalance of power. And those revelations just keep on coming, don't they? Whether in the form of Russell Brand's exploitation of young women and predatory behaviour towards co-workers and fellow talent, sexual misconduct at the CBI, or toxic cultures of bullying and harassment at McDonald's, no matter how far we think we've come in exposing such individuals and stamping these behaviours out, apparently there is always more to do. Little wonder, then, that leaders such as former BP boss Bernard Looney, exposed recently for failing to declare romantic relationships with colleagues, have been shown the door. But does it have to be this way? Is there ever an acceptable, above-board way for bosses to conduct relationships with more junior staff? And what about the rest of us? Can friends and family working together be, in some cases, a positive thing? And how should HR seek to protect the average employee, while also allowing them to be friends with and date whomever they choose? To help me explore these many questions and more, I spoke to Susan Hetrick, organisational psychologist and founder of Zura Consulting. Hetrick has worked at organisations including RBS and Deloitte as an HR leader and is author of book Toxic Organisational Cultures and Leadership, How to Build and Sustain a Healthy Workplace. I also spoke to Claudia Gard, who left the Swedish police force in 2017 to become COO and co-founder with her friend Ulrika Liha of GoFriendly, an all-female app that provides women with a safe matchmaking tool for making new friends. Let's start with Claudia to hear a bit more about the app, how she came to work alongside one of her best friends day in, day out, and what a scenario many of us might have fantasised about on darker days at the office is really like, warts and all.
So I reached out in a Facebook group for women that wanted to find friends. I was really nervous putting myself out there. Who will answer? Will I like the person that answers? Will I find her, interesting? And I just got one response. And it was from Ulrika. So like, yeah, she looks nice. So let's meet up. So we found each other in a Facebook group. And this was in the end of 2016. We met up on a fika. And that is Swedish for coffee and bun. A very important thing. We started to talk about our shared struggle and experience, like how to make friends as adult. If you don't have them from school or find them at your work, how then? And also the experience of life changes. All relationship shifts because of things like you move or you change interests, you're growing apart, or you're just being in different life situations. Inspired by the dating industry, we thought, why a similar concept wouldn't be applied to create, you know, a platform for friendship. So that's how GoFriendly was founded.
So what are the challenges to be aware of and the pitfalls to avoid when working with someone you're so close to personally as well as professionally?
One of the tougher things you face as a business partner and being friends is dealing with the financial stress in the company. And it kind of comes, you know, in cycles. It's been a situation when we weren't sure if we could pay the salaries due in 5-6 days. And that puts you in a lot of pressure, having employees rely on you and your ability to solve the problems, stress, anxiety, sleep disturbance, pressure from the board, pressure from investors, pressure from yourself. It feels like the recipe of losing things completely and tearing up your relationship with your business partner if you're not able to handle these situations well. For us, we've been through these situations, but been able to have, you know, a professional, very friendly take on it. We communicate well, we trust each other, and we know that we are so much stronger together. But otherwise, I think it's easy to go head to head in this kind of situation and maybe point fingers because it's really tough times sometimes out there. So it would be a challenge if we didn't want to have that person, if I didn't want to have Ulrika so close by my side. And also, you know, benefits of being friends at work, it spills over on your company and creates a really friendly company culture.
Claudia adds that perhaps more traditionally formed, established senior leadership teams could learn from this very close, communicative dynamic, which gets us straight into that all-important issue of what working relations should, in a perfect world, look and feel like. Just how important are relationships at work, both to getting stuff done and to employee engagement and morale? Without which, of course, a whole lot less stuff might get done. Here's Claudia again, touching on her experience not only as a startup boss, but also as previously a member of the Swedish police force.
We spend between 8 and 10 hours a day with coworkers and more waking time than with anyone else. Positive team relationship, it promotes good collaboration, trust and effective communication. I cannot see how this wouldn't boost your productivity or job satisfaction and engagement. And as a business owner and founder, productivity and job satisfaction is, you know, very important for us. I am all for having relationships and friendships at work in general. Me being a police officer, I think that is also highly important in that area as well. I think it's the next level of trust you need to have. You don't have to be friends, but you need to trust each other fully in another extent that you can ever imagine in just a regular job.
And there it is, one of the many knotty debates at the heart of the topic of workplace relationships and getting them just right. The question of, do you actually have to be friends with the people you work with? The answer would seem to be a resounding yes, particularly if you consider the fact that the statement, I have a best friend at work, features as question 10 on workplace consultancy Gallup's Q12 engagement assessment, a tool used as standard by many organisations. Indeed, Gallup claims that having a best friend at work correlates positively with a whole range of metrics, including profitability, safety, retention, and of course, engagement. No surprise then that the impression sometimes given is one of this being the most important indicator of workplace health. But is this the whole story? Here's Susan Hetrick.
Gallup asked the question, do you have a best friend at work? It's one of their Q12 questions. And they've linked that into having friends at work is higher job satisfaction and increased productivity, lower turnover and all of that. But what happens if you don't have a best friend at work? Your best friend is working in a different organisation. And then it leads me to say, well, what can the organisation do about that? And it is just this one question. I think there's not enough. It's not the only indicator of a healthy workplace culture. Far from it.
Perhaps surprisingly, for a co-founder of an app all about the importance of female friendship, Claudia agrees that being pals with co-workers isn't in fact always necessary or even desirable. Indeed, this was in a way the inspiration for GoFriendly in the first place. The fact many won't necessarily be best mates with colleagues and would in some cases rather seek out friends free from working life associations and baggage.
Sometimes you don't have too many co-workers and you don't click with anyone. And also we know that women using GoFriendly to find people in their local area, maybe not where they work. So I think that's one of the keys actually for GoFriendly and why it's so popular in Sweden. Your neighbour can be your next best friend.
On where the boundary should lie on workplace friendships, Claudia adds,
I don't believe that we all have to be friends, but we need to be friendly with each other. We need to respect each other and so on, because you cannot, you know, click with everyone out there. It's impossible. But it's important to make sure that everyone is involved. No one feel like outsider. You know, you can be having good talks, good laughs and so on with coworkers. I don't think you need to, you know, invite them over and have them in your private life as well. You know, as a co-founder and COO, I do restrict my friendship with employees. Even though, like in Sweden, we do have a very flat organizational structure, but I believe it's better to, you know, maintain a professional relationship with my employees. And of course, I'm lucky to have Ulrika by my side. I try to have a little bit of a distance, and if they want to be, you know, best friends, that I'm all for it. But I feel it's easier to manage things if I don't get too close to them.
Which gets us squarely into the territory of what happens when workplace relations go wrong. Perhaps because there's a power imbalance of some kind, even where this is only, in inverted commas, a friendship. Here's Susan on the question of how important relationships are in general to work, both in terms of their potential for positive impact, but also for negative, toxic repercussions.
Relationships in the workplace play a critical role in both productivity, but also in the overall experience at work, and they have both positive and negative impacts. So let's take some of the positive impact. So good relationships foster open communication. They make it easier to share ideas. They give and receive feedback, increase collaboration, better teamwork, trust, mutual respect, and overall improve morale. And we also find, you know, in the research, there is much higher employee engagement. So it may also be about sharing knowledge, facilitating career progression, etc. The negative impacts, well, you've got the conflict, stress, it impacts mental health, job satisfaction. Toxic relationships can lead to higher employee turnover. People are likely to leave their jobs where they feel sort of undervalued or mistreated. Impaired collaboration. Certain relationships in the workplace can also lead to bias or favouritism. Often from an HR practitioner, we're looking at relationships at work as being generally very positive. But in doing that, we're also saying that we need to have professional boundaries around to manage those potentially negative impacts.
So what, given all of this, does Susan think of ICV requiring those working for them to disclose to HR all close relationships with colleagues? Was this a good route to go down? Was it understandable, given the Schofield revelations? And what would the likely effect be of such a policy? Could it be tantamount in practice to banning all personal relationships at work?
We've got issues around perception management, around public relations. So I think being seen to take action was important for the organisation's image, especially in such a high-profile industry. The effectiveness of this policy will depend on its implementation and enforcement. Hopefully it won't drive those type of relationships underground that people are fearful of then reporting such relationships. I think it helps people to understand that it's important to recognise there's professional boundaries, not to blur these boundaries. But actually setting out and filling in a form and who's going to police that? And is that then sort of like the role of HR to check this? What happens if you fall out with that friend, do you have to notify? So I'm not quite sure the practicalities of that policy, to be honest. Sometimes we take a sledgehammer to crack a small nut. So when we talk about policies, is this endemic in the organisation or is it really to deal with a sort of a handful of people? And in which case, we could talk about a different type of intervention, which is talking to those individuals or being clear in training and education or in our code of conduct about what is appropriate and what is not in the workplace.
Whether ITV's policy will have a chilling effect on all workplace relations depends then on the detail of how it is implemented and enforced. But there's no doubt such a policy would make anyone think twice about engaging romantically with a colleague. As Susan says, this was surely the overall intent. And turning specifically to romantic relationships, the undeniably most fraught area of this topic for HR professionals, is it ever a good idea to ban staff from dating each other? Let's first hear from Claudia, who points out how inevitable falling in love at work is in many ways, but caveats that in some contexts, her former life as a police officer, for example, this just won't be appropriate. Indeed, she would add running a business to this list of contexts, explaining that she would much rather do this with a friend rather than a spouse or romantic partner.
From my experience, I think that my family draws me back and grounds me, and they force me in a good way to be present in something else than just go friendly. So my personality needs that barrier between work and private life. Otherwise, it would get blurred out, or maybe I would get burned out in both ends. It's hard to maybe keep it professional in the matter of having the same setup and rules. And if you have a board, for example, or management group, where are the decisions made? Over the kitchen table or in the boardroom? So I think it might be, you know, a person that's not related to them feeling like, okay, did I miss something here? Even between me and Ulrika, we do sometimes make decisions, you know, speaking in the phone at night, and then we kind of miss to inform others like, oh, sorry, we forgot to tell you this and that. When I was working as a police officer, if you had a romantic partner, you cannot work with that person. It's where are your loyalties and so on to be professional fully in your work. So, of course, it's a matter of safety and also a matter of handling situations, you know, what comes out of that. If you need to go through a legal things and testify or something, can be a conflict if you are a spouse. It's so much easier to handle this situation if you're just co-workers. I think it's like in larger organization, that's something that will happen. You know, we are in the same field, you have the same interests, and you see each other, you know, so many hours a day. And sure, you need to set kind of boundaries and rules on how you express your romantic relationship at work.
And here's Susan, sharing another context in which romantic or indeed familial relationships of any kind are considered a conflict of interest, and sharing her expert view on what should be in place from an HR standpoint to protect all staff from issues arising from romantic relationships at work.
Many organisations, and I've spent a lot of time working in financial organisations, people would say, well, let's look at kind of moving those individuals around. So when I was at the World Bank, we had a policy literally spelled out two different categories of relatives of an employee or member of staff that would be eligible for employment or not. So even before we got into kind of, you know, who could we employ? And if there was a close relationship, and I'm talking about a mother, father, brother, sister, not eligible for employment and called category one. Category two would be a more distant relationships. It could be a daughter-in-law, a father-in-law. But even in the case of them being employed, they would never be assigned to the same department. They could not directly or indirectly supervise one another. I met my husband at work, but it was a very open and transparent in the way that that was conducted. From an HR perspective, I think definitely guidelines on what we consider to be appropriate behaviour. But I think, you know, we are looking to protect all colleagues in a workplace. Everyone has a right to some form of personal privacy. So a supportive environment, having an open door policy for HR where individuals can come and talk about this, maintaining confidentiality, you know, not disclosing those areas, but making sure that people know that there is zero tolerance for any forms of harassment. I believe it's Google, actually. You can ask somebody out once, and if they make an excuse and say they're busy, then you can't ask them out again. So, you know, so trying to kind of think ahead of all those things. But I think it is about trying to balance an individual's right to have a consensual relationship, but also needing to maintain a professional, safe work environment.
Where the issue becomes really tricky, of course, going back to the case of former BP boss Bernard Looney, is where there's an imbalance of power. Susan says, particularly post-Me Too, a zero-tolerance policy is needed here. Again, acknowledging that sometimes these things do happen and people do fall in love with their managers or direct reports, but that the individuals in question need to be fully transparent from the off so HR can proceed accordingly.
I think it's inappropriate for a boss to have a relationship with a direct report, particularly. People do meet their partners at work, their long-term partners, but we also know that particularly some environments will place a disproportionate amount of power in the hands of a few. So a leader or a manager may kind of exploit that. What they may consider a romantic relationship may not be reciprocated. We saw these kind of levels of abuse with the likes of Harvey Weinstein. But we also see emergence of relationships where is it inappropriate for other team members to witness this? Is it appropriate for this relationship where you may have people who collude for their own ends against the organisation? And while I don't think banning relationships at work is either sort of desirable or indeed even practical, I do think there's a piece about transparency and all of that and professionalism. And where do we define the relationship? Is it a one-night stand? Is it moving in together? Where does the relationship begin and end? Those things are incredibly challenging and can lead to grievances, claims of harassment. So, on summary, on the whole, no, it's never a good idea.
Susan adds that an unusually high prevalence of romantic relationships in one organisation can be symptomatic and highly suggestive of a toxic culture and negative workplace relations in general, with bad behaviours going unchecked. So how should HR professionals ward against the kind of toxic cultures, from the post office to the CBI to the Met Police, making so many headlines of late? If culture is, after all, in large part about behaviours and workplace relationships, how do we help people behave and, crucially, interact positively?
The organisations I work with, which tend to be sort of medium to large size organisations, one of the first routes would be to look at a culture survey, culture quotient around what does the culture actually look like here, asking questions that may seem unpalatable, but actually really critical. And the questions that I asked about, you know, do you see sort of unacceptable behaviour in the workplace? When it's anonymous and people can feel free to actually do that, you can begin to see, are there any hotspots in which you need to look at that? The first one. Second piece is being really clear on the values that the organisation stands by. But these are not things that just are said, that they actually have to be sort of seen in reality. So coming back to being very specific what that looks like. Code of conduct, third piece, policy. Do our policies align with the culture that we're building or strengthening? So policies can have both a kind of very positive build effect in terms of the culture of the organisation, the same way they can have the reverse. The fifth one would be training and development, you know, continuous around to really focus on investing in your line managers, your supervisors at all levels through the organisation in building a very sort of professional working environment.
Nice practical pointers on a concept, culture, that can often seem nebulous and hard, along with people's behaviours and interactions, to influence in any meaningful, concrete way. To conclude this episode, I put our overarching thought experiment directly to Claudia and Susan. What if we did actually ban relationships at work? Again, would this even be possible? If so, what would such a working world be like? First, Claudia.
As an advocate for friendship, also with the support of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the need of belonging and social interaction is the third most important need right after basic needs, you know, food and shelter. So without having the possibility to have friends at work, that's like a doomsday scenario. I think let us thrive with relationships at work, and we all need to go friendly out there.
And here's Susan answering the same question and pointing out that the idea of banning any kind of relationship at work is a nonsense, really, given people will always have a certain kind of dynamic or connection with another person they interact with. It just might be a positive one, or it might, if employers don't give the topic enough thought, be negative.
And I'm not sure what that means in many respects. You have to define a relationship. You have to define what banning means. Does that mean if I'm talking to you, we have a relationship? So where does the relationship begin and end? It becomes almost a philosophical question that becomes so difficult to even think around. I don't believe we can ever ban relationships at work. Doing so, I think, is likely to drive such behaviour underground. The ideal scenario is a much more balanced approach. It sets clear boundaries, we have guidelines, and recognise the value of interpersonal relationships within a whole sort of positive and productive workplace culture. So I'd suggest that instead of banning relationships, we focus more on building a healthy workplace culture that encourages positive relationships and discourages toxicity.
You have been listening to the What If podcast, brought to you by the CIPD's Work magazine. To find out more about how the CIPD is dedicated to better work and working lives, visit cipd.co.uk. And don't forget to check out the rest of the What If series from your podcast provider or the peoplemanagement.co.uk website.